Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the murder of a French priest near Rouen. French President François Hollande says the men claim to be from the Islamic State group. Our correspondent in France, David Chazan, says the incident took place at a Catholic church.
As well as the 84-year-old parish priest whose throat was slit, three other people were injured in this horrific attack less than 2 weeks after the Bastille Day massacre of 84 people in Nice. It was carried out by two terrorists. Their identities have not been made public yet, but the pair were shot dead by police as they came out of the church.
At least 13 people have been killed in a twin suicide bomb attack in the Somali capital of Mogadishu. The White House is condemning the attacks outside the African Union and UN bases near the airport. From Washington, our correspondent Daniel Wrenches reports.
The attacks claimed by the Al-Shabaab militant group were targeting bases close to Mogadishu International Airport, killing 13 and injuring others, including Somali citizens, UN personnel, and soldiers from the African Union mission in Somalia. The White House has released a statement saying it condemns the attack in the strongest terms, offers condolences to those impacted, and adds that the US stands squarely with Somalia and partners in fighting against what it calls despicable acts of terrorism. Daniel Wrenches, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says he discussed the recent hack of the Democratic National Committee with his Russian counterpart. Mr. Kerry said the issue was raised with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov during a meeting in Laos. Our U.S. correspondent Kevin McAleese reports.
Talking to reporters, America's top diplomat said that while the hack was touched upon by the two men, no allegations were made against Russia's possible involvement. Mr. Kerry said he would wait for the outcome of an FBI investigation into the leak of almost 20,000 emails from Democratic Party officials. The release of documents by WikiLeaks this weekend was followed by allegations Russia was behind the move and was attempting to influence the upcoming US election. The Kremlin dismissed the theory as absurd. Some political experts in Washington, however, believe a Donald Trump victory would be the favorable outcome for Russia's president, Vladimir Putin. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
The Democrats are hoping to put some of the embarrassing revelations from the email hack attack behind them, as Simon Marks reports from Philadelphia. Next, Bill Clinton will make the case for his wife to be elected America's next president.
A handful of very vocal anti-Hillary Bernie Sanders supporters declaring that they will never vote for her in the November election and saying that a vote for Hillary is a vote for Donald Trump. The more their protests continue, the harder it will be for Hillary Clinton to demonstrate that the party is unifying around her.
This is FSN.
I did not have sex with that woman. You know what's interesting about the mainstream news, the media there? 30 people were killed near Mogadishu. 30 people blown to pieces by Al-Shabaab, apparently. A priest was murdered in France, and the priest, or the murder of the priest, is what leads in the news. I wonder, is anybody listening to that broadcast, or is that bulletin even, considering that? Why would that be the case, eh? Hello, how are you?
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Welcome to the program, as always. How are you? Hope you've had a good Tuesday. Today is the 26th of July 2016, and of course, you're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. We're broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 at FabRadioInternational.com in Manchester, AlternateCurrentRadio.com. Of course, we're on DavidIke.com and the TuneIn app and all the rest of it. Great to be with you. Coming up later in the program, the former oncologist Tullio Simoncini joins the program live from Italy. Now, Tullio was struck off some years ago for treating a cancer patient with bicarbonate of soda and not radiotherapy. He continues to treat terminally ill men and women today whom the medical people have given up on. He's on the show tonight. He will be answering your questions, will Tullio Simoncini. I reckon the last time Tullio was on the show was way back in the spring of last year, so it's been a long time since he was on. David Icke introduced me to Tullio, actually, I must tell you, a few years back, and I was very impressed with him. And I'm convinced that Tullio Simoncini is convinced of his thesis, regardless of what you might think about it or what you don't think about it. He's convinced of it. That's my opinion. Anyway, so that's going to be good, and that's coming up a little bit later on. Speaking of David Icke, well, he gave me belly laughs today, did David. He's in Melbourne at the moment, and I think, I don't know what the time difference is, but I'm guessing it's at least 9 hours, possibly 10 or 11 hours ahead of British summer time. So he's a good bit ahead. He's a half a day ahead of us here anyway. So all is going well. And he sent me a text really early this morning, knowing that I would be up. And in it, he said he was going to see Juventus, the Italian team, play Spurs, of course, the famous English team, in a friendly match at Melbourne Cricket Ground, the famous MCG, right? So he was excited about that because Jamie is a Spurs fan. David's son Jamie, who's managed the Worldwide Wake Up Tour and has basically produced it and done a terrific job on it too, it must be said, has Jamie. So off they went to the game anyway. And minus the expletives, this is the email I got from David earlier on today. How are you, Rich? Worst effing game I have ever seen. Tottenham played the reserves. Juventus played the reserves. Tottenham lost 2-1 when it should have been 4-1. And the insult to the Aussie fans was that Harry Kane's picture was everywhere in the promotion and he was never seen. Freezing cold, off to bed and hope Tottenham get relegated. Fantastic, grumpy old man. Then he signed off by saying, I feel better now. So he's having a good time down there. And of course on Saturday, this coming Saturday, he's in Melbourne. And to find out more about that, it's at a racetrack, isn't it? A race course. There are tickets available. It will be sold out by Saturday. Just go to theworldwidewakeup.com and evendavidike.com and find out how to get tickets there. That did make me laugh today. How could it be freezing cold in Melbourne? I know it's winter there, but does it get cold in Melbourne? Or is it just grumpy old Ike? I don't know. I've never been to Australia. I must find out sometime in the future. 7.5 minutes past the hour. As usual, you can participate in this programme by emailing me, richie@richieallen.co.uk. But do, of course, tweet me. It's much quicker and I get the tweets quickly. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Tell me what you're thinking. And, of course, I know you will be interested in asking questions of Tullio Simoncini, who joins me a little bit later on in the programme. Hi to Sean McTeague, to Tommy B, to Michael Marshall, to Sean McDonald and everybody who's tuning in right now from all over the shop. Our listeners tuning in from everywhere. Right then, let's crack on with the programme. I've given you everything, right? I've given you everything. By the way, I do like to mention occasionally, Alternate Current Radio at alternatecurrentradio.com has a really good chat room. And the people in the chat room are listening to the live programmes on ACR and are talking about them. So if you want a good barney with somebody or a good debate with somebody, check out the chat room there. And also, like Fab Radio, it has a terrific schedule of brilliant programmes, completely untainted by the cesspit or the cesspool that is the mainstream media. So do check out ACR and Alternate Current Radio, Hesh and all the folks there. Now, obviously the story at the top of the news, the first story, the lead story there from FSN at the beginning of the programme, was that an 84-year-old priest was killed and four other people taken hostage by two armed men who stormed a church in a suburb of Rouen in northern France. Now, the BBC reports that the attackers said they were from the so-called Islamic State. And horrifically, it must be said, if we believe the reports, they slit the priest's throat after forcing him to kneel while he was saying the morning mass. The priest has been named as Father Jacques Hamel. He's obviously dead. Later on, the police surrounded the church in Saint-Étienne-du-Rouvray and shot dead both of the hostage takers. So they're dead. Now, we'll hear from the French president, François Hollande, in a minute. He visited the scene today and he has been speaking about it. They are saying, are the authorities, in inverted commas, that the one of the attackers is reported to have been known to French police and that he tried to get into Syria last year. So one of them was known to the police and the police knew or are suggesting that he tried to head off to Syria. Presumably the story goes to join IS in Syria there. There was a raid on a house in the area in the aftermath of the attack, and French prosecutors earlier said that one person had been arrested following that raid. Now, I mentioned that the French president, François Hollande, has visited the scene. He said the terrorists will stop at nothing if we don't stop them. This is him speaking earlier.
We are facing a group of IS who has declared war against us. We should face up to this war using all the means within the respect of the law, which means that we are a democracy. What these terrorists want is to divide us. Today, following the death of this priest, I would like to address, I have a thought for all the Catholics of France. I would like to express my support. I will meet the Archbishop of Normandy and to talk about the situation. Today, I will receive representatives from all religions, faith. We should be together. It's not the Catholic who had been targeted. It is all the French people. The anti-terror prosecutor is in charge of to pursue the inquiry and the investigation, and the information will be given to the prosecutor. But today, we should be aware, if it's needed, that the terrorists will stop at nothing as long as we don't stop them. It is our will. It is what we are going to do endlessly, within the law means, and also the deployment of the forces. The French people should know that they are threatened. It is not this only country. Germany has witnessed the same thing, but their force comes from their cohesion.
That was François Hollande speaking at the scene of the murder of this priest a little bit earlier on this afternoon. Now, Mohamed Karabila, forgive my pronunciations, by the way, he's a local Muslim leader. He spoke to the Associated Press and said that one of the attackers had been followed by the police for at least a year and a half. That person is believed to be Adel K. That's what they're calling him, Adel K. And the French iTelly website said that Adel K had tried to reach Syria back in May of last year, but it was turned back at the Turkish border. So presumably, and I know what you're thinking, dear listener, I know what you're thinking. Presumably, French people will be up in arms about this, about how the police knew so much about this guy and followed him for a year and a half, and why he was allowed back into France after deciding that he wanted to go to Syria and join up with Islamic State. Right, okay. So that was François Hollande a little bit earlier on. I'm going to tell you more about this now in the next couple of minutes, but I'm going to be jumping backwards and forwards here with one or two things. Now, Russia Today earlier spoke to the author and political analyst Pierre Schweitzer. Pierre Schweitzer, you often see him on RT. He's a political analyst and a terrorism expert. This is what he had to say to RT. Listen carefully.
So the Catholic Church has always been a target. And secondly, a very small town, a very quiet, peaceful town, is a deliberate choice as well. They want to show that nowhere in France is safe. That makes perfect sense in their twisted logic.
Let's just talk a bit about the tactics used here as well. These attackers were armed with knives. The previous 2 weeks ago now, I believe, the attack in Nice, that used a truck. Now, these aren't bombs, these aren't guns, something that one would have to either have obtained with quite a lot of difficulty in Europe or indeed build on their own. These are weapons which anybody could have in their kitchen, in their garage, etc. Is this a bit of a worrying shift in the tactics used by terrorists just because it's so hard to prevent, and potentially any radicalized Islamist will have a whole host of weapons at their display, whether that is an axe, a knife, or a car. They will use these as weapons against soft civilian targets.
Yes, of course, and that's the whole point of terrorism, is to make us feel that we will never be safe, entirely 100% safe, because anything can be a weapon. And I would say even with a knife, even with stones or anything, could be a weapon.
So nobody's asking any questions here. And in the absence of questions by the mainstream media, we'll do our best here on the Richie Allen Show to put a few fair questions, not in any way insensitive questions, but fair questions about this attack. So Islamic State, then, through the channels that it uses to confirm whether it did or whether it didn't commit an attack, has said that it was responsible for the murder of this priest. Now, back in the old days, the IRA had a code word, didn't they? So they would contact the media, or they would contact the police in Britain, and using a code word known only to the IRA and to the police, they would be able to verify if they were responsible for something. I don't know how they do this today. Well, I do, really. I'm being a bit sarcastic. I'll tell you more about that in a minute as well. What I'm wondering is, and I wondered about this today on social media, if this man was acting on the orders of Islamic State handlers in Syria or in Iraq, if these two men, why did they hold several people hostage in a church? Why didn't they just murder everybody at the scene? Why do that? What's the advantage to holding people hostage and only murdering the priest? That doesn't make any sense, really. It really doesn't. Or, oh, okay, then, maybe that's a bit unfair of me to say that. I should say that it can be argued. An argument can be made in light of what the authorities, in inverted commas, have told us about Islamic State. In light of everything they tell us, surely you can make an argument that this was a very bizarre attack by two men. To slit the throat of an 85-year-old priest in front of a congregation of only a handful of people, maybe a few people escaped, I don't know, and not kill anybody else, I don't understand it. Who phoned the police? How did the police learn about it? How did they get there in time to prevent any larger scale loss of life? Yeah. Well, Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, she's been meeting with the Irish Taoiseach about Brexit. Enda Kenny, gormless Muppet, Irish Premier, you could call him the Taoiseach. And after speaking about Brexit, I can't share the clip with you, I'm sad to say, because I can't download it. But I can tell you, without fear of contradiction, that after speaking about the great relationship between Ireland and England and all of that nonsense, Theresa May said that the reason these attacks happen is because these people hate our freedom. It's exactly what she said. Our shared values. They hate our democracy. That's why they hate us. It's what they cannot stand. And I was thinking, again, as I do, when Theresa May was saying that, it sounded very much like this.
Americans are asking, why do they hate us? They hate what they see right here in this chamber, a democratically elected government. Their leaders are self-appointed. They hate our freedoms, our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, our freedom to vote and assemble and disagree with each other.
Repeated a million times, and I could have shared other clips, audio clips of, we've got to do everything we can to stop the terrorist killers. Now watch me play this golf shot. There was echoes of that today in Francois Hollande's impromptu press conference at the scene there, just outside Rouen, when he said, we got to stop them, and all of this, and then he just walked away, you know, kind of a goofy expression on his face. So it's all very familiar. It's all very familiar. They hate us. They hate our freedoms. They hate who we are. Radicalisation online. Now, today and tomorrow, there's going to be an awful lot of talk in mainstream media about radicalisation. When they announce that an attack was motivated by men or women who were groomed by ISIS in Syria or in Iraq, they talk about radicalisation. Now, dear listener, what they mean by radicalisation is, radicalisation, according to the authorities in inverted commas, is where people, let's say second, third, fourth generation people of Arabic origin, might be Pakistani, might be Iraqi, might be Iranian, let's just say people of the Muslim faith, they are motivated from afar, right? Radicalized from afar on social media. They are motivated, they are groomed, and they are seduced into committing heinous crimes by people they have never met. People whom they've fallen under the spell of. That's what we're to believe anyway. They were persuaded to attack using anything at their disposal, a car, a knife, a gun if you can get one, and all the better if you can make a bomb using the guidance of these jihadists in Syria or in Iraq, right? That's what radicalization is. That's what they want you to believe. Now, at this point, I'm going to pause for a really, really quick break. When I come back, I'm going to attempt, using my experience of following this and following Al-Qaeda and following all of these radical groups and all these stories for many years now, I'm going to attempt to explain who ISIS really is and what ISIS really is and who they really are. And I'm not going to repeat things I've said to you before on the programme, but I'm going to do that just after these short messages, 21 and a half minutes past the hour.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for all your tweets. Massive amounts of tweets coming in, and I will read them or some of them a little bit later on, but I want to play on with this because I feel this is very important. Especially today, especially because of the last 2 or 3 weeks, and because this has seemingly been ramped up now, these terrorist events all over Europe and elsewhere, ramped up to where some people are even calling this the false flag summer, or the summer of false flag, or the summer of false flags even, or the summer of terror. So I want to progress with this for a minute. So ISIS then are a big scary network of radical jihadists. Terrifying in that their reach extends right across the Mediterranean, right? That's what we're told about them. They can push buttons in young Asian men and women and make them do horrific things. That's what the media says. There is no question of that narrative whatsoever. It's forbidden to question it. It's absolutely verboten. Can't question that. That's a fact. That's what goes on. And as for the way the media behaves and how it behaves, a little bit more on that a little bit later on. So, who are ISIS then? Where did that name come from? Who are ISIS? Well, officially, it's a Salafi jihadist militant group. That's your ballpark. That's your, I suppose, your base Wikipedia definition. Salafi jihadist militant group that follows a fundamentalist Wahhabi doctrine. Sunni Islam. Now, we are told today in 2016, you can do your own homework on any of this and feel free to challenge any of my findings or my assertions. We are told that this group identified itself with the name Islamic State back in June 2014. We know this, okay? I was just about to launch this program, following this carefully, I have been since 2011. When they said, or somebody said, they were called ISIS, it was announced that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was the commander of ISIS. Now, I want you to bear in mind this, and I have said this in programs, not recently, but in the not too distant past. You've got to really bear this in mind. You've got to share this sort of stuff with people. Nobody has ever interviewed anybody associated with the leadership of Islamic State. Why not? The Western media uses videos all the time, right? All the time. And the Western media says these videos are spread online by ISIS. And this is ISIS telling us who they are. So you get the videos. Come back to the videos later. And you get occasional interviews with those claiming to have escaped from the clutches of ISIS. So that's what you get. Videos. Look at this video of a beheading there. Look at the text on the flag. Listen to the music. This is who they are. This is ISIS. And every now and then Sky News will interview some person with their face blacked out and an actor's voice claiming to have escaped and giving the goods on ISIS, right? Strange there's been no interview. A group, and I was thinking all day long about this, a group that seeks such publicity, that's so savvy with social media, you'd imagine they would love to do a TV special with CNN or the BBC or Fox or whoever, right? Now, I've asked the MSM, several outlets, why they haven't interviewed these guys. No response from the MSM. Even though I pointed out they used to talk to Sinn Féin, the political wing of the IRA. You might remember they used to use voices, actors' voices even, to portray Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness and other Sinn Féin leading politicians of the day. Bizarrely. But they used to talk to them. Remember that. I'm guessing, and again, I'm only guessing, I can't speak for the media, but I'm guessing they would probably say, Mr. Allen, it's too dangerous to interview these guys. It's too dangerous. Or that they wouldn't give airtime to barbarians. I'm sure they would say that as well. I said, you don't have to go to Syria to interview these guys. You can get them on Skype and do an interview with them, pre-record it, put it out there. They don't want to do it. Bizarre. All these Pulitzer seeking journalists, where are they? Remember Jane Fonda, many years ago, went out to Vietnam to interview the Viet Cong. Remember that? As did other US journalists. But ISIS, no. Nobody wants to speak to them, chat with them, and find out what it is they bloody well want. So I'm going to tell you this, and I want you to listen before you start throwing things at the radio there. Listen to where this goes before you start thinking I've joined the funny farm. ISIS doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. What I mean by that is, it doesn't exist as an organisation with structures and cells, as a body, an agency. It doesn't exist like that. Remember last year, you remember some of the crazy media stories that ISIS were building English schools to attract converts from Britain and America. Do you remember that? Do you remember that bollocks? Totally unsubstantiated that. They said that ISIS were writing manuals for people when they arrived to help them settle in. Manuals for how best to rape a woman. And all of that, as I said, unsubstantiated nonsense. Big organisation with levels, like a company. That's what ISIS is supposed to be. It isn't. It isn't. I'm going to tell you what ISIS is. It's a band of... I said to myself today, don't write this down, because you want to do this off the cuff. Maybe I should have written a few things down. I'm going to say that they're an unconnected band of jihadists. They're a band of jihadists, individuals, maybe small groups who wanted to establish Islamist societies, for want of a better word, in the Middle East in general. Now, I believe, as a historian or as a student of history formerly, there have always been groups like this in the Middle East. Guys who wanted to establish kind of conservative, very hard, very far-right Islamist cities and conclaves, for want of a better word, right? That's my opinion. Now, some of these guys would have been students of people like the Egyptian author Said Kutub, but not exclusively him now, it must be said, but people like Said Kutub, check him out. He was executed in 1966. He was hung for plotting the assassination of Abdel Nasser, of course, in Egypt. But Said Kutub wrote loads and loads and loads of books about Islamist philosophy. He was very conservative. A lot of these guys would subscribe to his ideas. But these are individual groups, these people. Remember this. This is important. Okay. So, unconnected jihadists. There's never, ever been any evidence. I was arguing with a friend of mine today about this. And he was arguing back. But he couldn't show me any evidence. There's never been a Middle East-wide, and that's a terrible way of putting it, but a regional organisation with a power structure and a chain of command. There has never been. The idea is that there's a network, a coming together of jihadists with one ideology. That idea came from the American neoconservative movement. Now, I know you know this, but I'm telling you again anyway. And these guys, of course, William Kristol Sr., Kristol, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, Cheney, lunatics like John Bolton, these people are the disciples of Leo Strauss. Look up Leo Strauss and find out who he is. They invented that bollocks. These are the same guys that spent years convincing the American people that the big red menace in the East was coming any minute to turn them all into commies. More on that in a minute. So I want to go back a few years to kind of explain this in a kind of a Cliff Notes kind of way. How we have ISIS today, who they really are and who is behind them. So I'm going to use a film that was made, and I've referred to this film over the years in various programs I've made. A film, a documentary series, a trilogy made by a guy called Adam Curtis for the BBC. Now I reckon it's the greatest mainstream documentary series ever. Remember I said mainstream. And it's extraordinary in how close it gets to giving you and giving me the real deal on what's going on and where it is heading. But of course it stops short because it's mainstream. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. Have a listen to the first 60 seconds of the film just to get a flavour of it. Adam Curtis, The Power of Nightmares. The opening 60 seconds of the first episode.
In the past, politicians promised to create a better world. They had different ways of achieving this, but their power and authority came from the optimistic visions they offered their people. Those dreams failed, and today, people have lost faith in ideologies. Increasingly, politicians are seen simply as managers of public life. But now, they have discovered a new role that restores their power and authority. Instead of delivering dreams, politicians now promise to protect us from nightmares. They say that they will rescue us from dreadful dangers that we cannot see and do not understand. And the greatest danger of all is international terrorism, a powerful and sinister network with sleeper cells in countries across the world. A threat that needs to be fought by a war on terror. But much of this threat is a fantasy which has been exaggerated and distorted by politicians. It's a dark illusion that has spread unquestioned through governments around the world, the security services and the international media.
Much of this threat is a phantom spread unquestioned throughout the world through the security services and through the media. It's a very powerful claim made by Adam Curtis in his film, and it is of course backed up to the hilt by the three films and everything else that comes with it. I'll come back to that in a minute because I'm going to be jumping around here. Now in the films The Power of Nightmares, Curtis explains who and what Al-Qaeda is. Now this is central to understanding what ISIS is. So he explains what Al-Qaeda is as an organisation. Remember now, these films were produced and released by the BBC in 2003 and 2004. Produced in 2003, released in 2004. So that's 3 years after 9/11 and a year after the invasion of Iraq. Curtis says in his film, David Icke and others have been saying this for years, there was never any wide-ranging and far-reaching group, no network, that basically the United States invented Al-Qaeda. And the reason they invented Al-Qaeda was pretty simple. They wanted to blame Osama bin Laden for organising attacks that he didn't personally participate in. It sounds very organised crime-like, doesn't it? But that's exactly what it was about. So this is another clip from The Power of Nightmares. It's 3 minutes long, this. So pay attention to this. This is how the United States coined the phrase Al-Qaeda and convinced the world that Al-Qaeda was a monstrous criminal organisation with multiple layers, far-reaching around the world, with sleeper cells all over the place. Listen to this. This is vital.
For beyond his own small group, bin Laden had no formal organisation until the Americans invented one for him. In January 2001, a trial began in a Manhattan courtroom of four men accused of the embassy bombings in East Africa. But the Americans had also decided to prosecute bin Laden in his absence. But to do this under American law, the prosecutors needed evidence of a criminal organisation. Because as with the mafia, that would allow them to prosecute the head of the organisation, even if he could not be linked directly to the crime. And the evidence for that organisation was provided for them by an ex-associate of bin Laden's called Jamal Al-Fadl.
During the investigation of the 1998 bombings, there is a walk-in source, Jamal Al-Fadl, who's a Sudanese militant who was with bin Laden in the early 90s, who has been passed around a whole series of Middle Eastern secret services, none of whom want much to do with him, who ends up in America and is taken on by the American government, effectively, as a key prosecution witness, and given a huge amount of American taxpayers' money at the same time. His account is used as raw material to build up a picture of Al-Qaeda. The picture that the FBI want to build up is one that will fit the existing laws that they will have to use to prosecute those responsible for the bombing. Now, those laws were drawn up to counteract organised crime, the mafia, drugs crime, crimes where people being a member of an organisation is extremely important. You have to have an organisation to get a prosecution. And you have Al-Fadl and a number of other witnesses, a number of other sources, who are happy to feed into this, who've got material that looked at in a certain way can be seen to show this organisation's existence. You put the two together and you get what is the first bin Laden myth, the first Al-Qaeda myth. And because it's one of the first, it's extremely influential.
The picture Al-Fadl drew for the Americans of bin Laden was of an all-powerful figure at the head of a large terrorist network that had an organized hierarchy of control. He also said that bin Laden had given this network a name, Al-Qaeda. It was a dramatic and powerful picture of bin Laden, but it bore little relationship to the truth. The reality was that bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri had become the focus of a loose association of disillusioned Islamist militants who were attracted by the new strategy. But there was no organization. These were militants who mostly planned their own operations and looked to bin Laden for funding and assistance.
And ISIS is exactly the same. The vacuums in Iraq and Libya, left by the way, by the bombardment of both of those countries, was filled by hardline conservative Islamists who wanted to establish Islamist societies. And this was always the plan, you see. And I've had 100 arguments when I worked in mainstream media with various political heads, various think tank people, from the States that I used to interview on programmes, people like Joel Rubin and people like that, James Boyce in London, the friend of the Clintons. I've interviewed these people over the years and they want you to believe that this was bad planning. The vacuums in Iraq and Libya were designed to be filled by these groups of Islamists who wanted to establish caliphates, not worldwide caliphates. but in the countries they came from. This was always the plan. I do get a bit dogmatic here, and I do get a bit shouty, because I'm passionate about this, I'm frustrated by it, and I've been speaking about this for years. We've said hundreds of times on this programme, as have some of our guests, there's the chaos right there, the planned chaos, the mayhem, out of which comes the migrant crisis and everything else that goes with that. So it's individuals, these hardline Islamists, of which there are not nearly as many as some would have you believe, by the way, but joined, of course, by mercenaries. Mercenaries. Guys who'll fight for anybody. Given enough money, given enough women, given enough, access, given enough power, will fight for anybody. These are the guys the CIA, MI6 and Mossad sent into Syria. These groups of jihadis. And they were given access to money. They were given all the military hardware they could use, while George Soros was stirring up opposition to Bashar al-Assad and getting his lackeys in the Western media to sell the monumentally bullshit story that there was a popular democratic uprising in Syria when there wasn't. There wasn't one. All of that's going on. And these guys, according to Roland Dumas, the former French foreign minister in Mitterrand's government, Dumas said that as far back as 2008 and 2009, these guys were being trained and sent into Syria to do this. So there's no structure. There's no network. And no matter how many times the media tells you Islamic State said this or Islamic State said that, Islamic State doesn't exist. I'm not telling you for a minute that the lunatics beheading people and causing mayhem in Syria and Iraq don't exist. I'm not telling you that at all. I'm telling you they are not what your media wants you to believe they are. And tragically, so much of the so-called independent media has fallen for this hook, line and sinker and have taken to endorsing people like Donald Trump and others as an answer to this. Blaming every murder on the so-called religion of peace. Falling right into the hands of those really behind it. There's no network. There's no structure. It's an absolute fabrication. Adam Curtis said this 12 years ago. And it's a fabrication designed to convince you and to convince me that there is a massive enemy. An Emmanuel Goldstein figure. A powerful crime syndicate. That's hell-bent on forcing Islam on you. In your country. But there's never been any evidence of that. These groups of hardline Islamists want to force a brutal form of Islam on people in their own countries. But they would be getting nowhere without the intervention of Western intelligence agencies who give them the weaponry and the money they need. And I challenge anybody listening to this, if you disagree with me, I challenge you to take me on this programme anytime. I have the facts and I have the history. If you've got any evidence of the contrary, I'm throwing the gauntlet down right now. They've been doing this forever, I said it earlier on, using phantom threats to justify spending billions on military hardware, spending millions on surveillance, militarizing the police while people go hungry. While people are homeless because they're losing their homes and their jobs. And in The Power of Nightmares, Curtis demonstrates this when he reminds us that when Donald Rumsfeld was the Defense Secretary under Gerald Ford, he was lying to the American people about the Russian military capability. The lying bastard. He was standing in front of the American people saying that the Russians were building up a terrifying arsenal. They weren't. They were harmless. And the CIA was telling Rumsfeld, you shouldn't be telling the American people this because it's a lie. Listen to this.
And the neoconservatives seized their moment. They allied themselves with two right-wingers in the new administration of Gerald Ford. One was Donald Rumsfeld, the new Secretary of Defense. The other was Dick Cheney, the president's chief of staff. Rumsfeld began to make speeches alleging that the Soviets were ignoring Kissinger's treaties and secretly building up their weapons with the intention of attacking America.
The Soviet Union has been busy. They've been busy in terms of their level of effort. They've been busy in terms of the actual weapons that they've been producing. They've been busy in terms of expanding production rates. They've been busy in terms of expanding their institutional capability to produce additional weapons at additional rates. They've been busy in terms of expanding their capability to increasingly improve the sophistication of those weapons. Year after year after year, they've been demonstrating that they have steadiness of purpose, that they're purposeful about what they're doing. Now, your question is, what ought one to be doing about that?
The CIA and other agencies who watched the Soviet Union continuously for any sign of threat said that this was a complete fiction. There was no truth to Rumsfeld's allegation.
And if you're living in a real world, if you're living in a fair world, a pure world, a beautiful world, Donald Rumsfeld would never have been standing in front of the American people on the 10th of September 2001 to say he lost $2.3 trillion, because he would have been in jail for lying to the American people about the threat of Russia. These people are psychotic. They did it then, they did it now. And I'm not going to get into, in this monologue, what's working through these people to make them do that, and what the end game is. Leave that for another day with another guest. He was telling people, they're busy, they're busy, they're busy. They're doing this, they're doing that. At any minute now, they could march in here. All the while this was going on, Hollywood was making all sorts of films about the threat from Russia, demonising the Russian people, demonising the Russian government of the day. While the CIA were telling the Ford administration and Rumsfeld, Russia is a paper tiger. Don't worry about it. And my friend, they are doing it today. Because in 2016, the Defense Secretary of the United States, a man called Ashton Carter, listened to this lawyer speaking to the media today, a completely subservient media who doesn't dare ask him a single question, as he again states the massive lie that there is no progress in Syria because of Russia's support for the regime and because Russia are targeting moderate opposition forces to Bashar al-Assad. This is Ashton Carter today. Deja vu all over again.
Secretary Kerry's exploring for the Russians to begin to do the right thing in Syria. They obviously have been backing the regime, which has had the effect of prolonging the civil war, whereas we had hoped that they would promote a political solution and transition to put an end to the civil war, which is the beginning of all this violence in Syria, and then combat extremists rather than moderate opposition, which has to be part of that transition. So they're a long way from doing that, but that's what Secretary Kerry's trying to promote and getting the Russians to do the right thing.
Russia is targeting moderate opposition to Bashar al-Assad, and they're not targeting extremists in the country. This is a monumental lie. It's a sickening lie. It's a lie with far-reaching consequences for everybody. And yet the lapdog media, and you can find that on Ruptly TV or on RT on YouTube, sit there like lapdogs and ask what they call in America the softball questions. Kerry is meeting, or he met Sergei Lavrov today. He meets Putin either tomorrow or later. It must be tomorrow, wasn't it? And it's utter nonsense. So to those who listen to this program, who are slightly to the right of Genghis Khan, I hope you've heard everything I said there, and not just what you wanted to hear. Lunatics and mercenaries are doing unspeakable things, and occasionally through the migrant crisis, or through, you know, people just going a bit batshit crazy, because it does happen. You know, there are people of the Muslim persuasion, there are men who look at what's happened to Iraq, who look at what's happened to Libya, who see what's going on in Syria, and they get pissed off. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Not saying it doesn't happen. But Islamic State does not exist. A major crime organization with tentacles reaching into countries throughout the world, using social media to lure in disenchanted young men and women and to turn them into nutters, that is not happening on anything like the scale they want you to believe it. These are people who have always existed, who have always wanted, within whatever country they live in, whether it's Nigeria, whether it's Yemen, whether it's Syria, not so much Syria, of course, whether it's Iraq or even Iran, people who want to force or imposition the rest of the people of their country with an extreme form of Islam, they exist. But there's never been any desire to make this go around, to enforce this on the world at large. And shame on people in the independent media who should know better and who should know who's really pulling the strings of all of this, making this happen, setting people against one another, murdering people in false flag attacks. Not murdering people in hoax attacks designed to terrorise people into compliance and acquiescence. Yeah, yeah, you can do what you want. You can put cameras where you want. I said last week, you can send a CIA guy. You can send an MI5 guy to live with me if you want. Please keep me safe. We kill one another. And hate. It's exactly what they want. And again, you know, these days I'm less pissed off with the mainstream media than I am with the independent media and the carry on within the independent media. I'll tell you what the mainstream media is. It's a bunch of young, good-looking, narcissistic men and women. Hewed straight from university. Good-looking. Ambitious. Wildly ambitious. Narcissistic. Will never ask a question. Never, ever ask a question. Read that copy. Read that copy. You're interviewing the French foreign minister in a minute. Ask her or ask him these questions. Don't ask him anything else. No problem, sir. I'll do whatever I want so long as I'm on, or whatever you want so long as I'm on television. So long as I'm on television, so long as I am fucking famous, I will do whatever you want. This is the media. Somebody said the other day, some of these people, Richie, they must be thinking this is a load of bollocks. They don't. They don't think that. Wildly ambitious, Faye Dunaway type people from the film Network. Lumet's film. That's who these people are. They don't question anything. They couldn't give a shit. Read the copy. Read the copy. Read the copy. Ask the questions on the paper. Then go home and spend the money we give you. That's the essence of it. This is your Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. I'll be back in a minute after, after this from Iggy Pop.
I'm a real wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
You're listening to The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Real Wild Child from Iggy Pop on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 3.5 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your show, broadcasting live on Alternate Current Radio, on Fab Radio International and DavidIcke.com. Stay with DavidIcke.com /headlines. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. The boy is in Melbourne this weekend on Saturday. Go to the worldwidewakeup.com. Find out more about that there. Colin sent me an email. Colin, how are you? My headphones are really loud. I'm going to turn down the old headphones there. Thoroughly agree with your words on ISIS, Richie, but I would take issue with your words on the mainstream media. Richie says the mainstream media would have you believe it isn't the MSM, but surely those in charge are the ones who organise the false stories for the public's swallowing. Is the elite organising the hate campaign against Russia, against the migration in Europe, which has already been forward planned to create the problems to bring down our civilization standards, says Colin on the Costa del Sol there. Thanks, Colin. Now, there's been somewhere in the region of dozens and dozens and dozens of tweets about the monologue, and I just kept going and I didn't stop to read tweets. I'll just pick out a couple of them. Daza says, listening intently right now, good work, all the best. I read that out because I've not heard from Daza before, at Super Taxi. Daza, how you doing? Hi to the Order, who says the first crusade was against the Muslim Caliphate pushing into Europe. Part of Islam wants to continue that war, like the Zionists want to rule, says the Order. He disagrees with me, as he's entitled to do. Sean McTee says the amount of people that still don't believe it or get it is mental. And this is probably why they keep doing these things. Adam tweets, I smell Israeli shenanigans there. Dean tweets, I'll never forget $2.3 million going missing a day before 9/11 even. It's mental. It's mental, he says. Tommy tweets, how does this link to the attacks in Europe? Patsies or what? Says Tommy. There's so many methods, Tommy, of doing what it is they do. I don't know. Mark tweets, I agree with what you've said. It's all a load of balls. Mark, I wish I just said that and not spoken for 45 minutes on it. But you're right, I can't argue with that. Steve Coughlin tweets, Richie, you might be challenged on your views, but not successfully. There is no contradictory evidence, says Steve. Thanks, Steve. So many tweets, folks. You know, if you want to see what others are tweeting, I always say this. Go to Twitter and put Richie Allen Show, all one word, no spaces, Richie Allen Show, and press enter, and you can read what others are saying, and then you can answer them and chat away with them as well. Martin tweets, brilliant monologue tweets, Martin. Martin, thanks very much for that. I will, of course, be, or Simon will be, taking that apart, minus the ad break, well, not minus the ad break, but minus the music, and putting it on YouTube tomorrow. Thanks, Simon Stewart, for all the work he does on the YouTube channel. Antenna tweets, I've loved every one of Adam Curtis's films. It would be awesome to get him on the show, or John Pilger. Neither of them have responded to repeated requests to come in on the programme. Never had any luck getting Adam Curtis on, and I've had no luck with John Pilger either. No luck whatsoever. They have been tried, but they haven't come on. There you are. Can't say any more than that. Hi to Hubertus. Hi to Stephen Lash. How you doing, Stephen? In Manchester here as well. And as I talk to you, there's another 40 tweets come in there, and I'm just not going to get to read all of these out. Hi to David Stanford, to Wayne as well, and to Vincent. Vincent alleges, well, he's sent a picture there, but it's from a terrible website called yournewswire.com, Vincent, which is a parasitic clickbait website, an utter load of bollocks, a bunch of con men using the People's Voice Facebook page, which is an organisation that doesn't exist anymore, to draw people to a clickbait website. And most of the stories on Your Newswire are absolute garbage. So I'm not going to say any more about that. Daniel tweets, Richie, and how they exported their version of Islam to places like Afghanistan, state-sponsored terrorism, says Daniel there as well. And Natalie tweets, yay for Podomatic. I have an unnecessarily long train journey tomorrow morning, says Natalie. Yes, we do podcast this programme as well. Hi to Adam, to Danny, to Tristan as well. Tristan tweets, I'm bleeding heart pro-Palestinian, but Richie, you have to acknowledge the violence going on. Not all of it is fake. Tristan, I never said it. All of it is fake. Never. There's a lot of violence, false flag operations carried out by agents of the state, genuine violence. There are genuine attacks by people whom have been, whom have made it into Europe through the, I don't want to say hidden in the flow of migrants, but I suppose that's probably the best way of putting it, hidden in the flow of migrants, who will do things. No doubt about it, I'm not saying that at all, I've never said that. Never said that at all. In fact, I'm not saying anything like it. It's exactly 2 minutes to the top of the hour. Now, coming up in a minute, on the or in the second hour of the programme, Tullio Simoncini is standing by, just spoke with Tullio. Now, he's a former oncologist, as I mentioned earlier on, and he was struck off for treating a cancer patient with bicarbonate of soda and not radiotherapy. Yeah. I've known Tullio a long time. He continues to treat terminally ill men who seek him out, men and women. He doesn't solicit business. They come to him when their doctors have given up, and he claims he has been successful in many cases. Now, he will be taking your questions, and I will be putting them to him. Tullio Simoncini joins me in a couple of minutes' time. Just to let you know, Max Egan joins the programme tomorrow. A lot of excitement about that. And I'll tell you about Thursday's programme shortly as well. Busy all week on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back. It's Tuesday, the 26th of July 2016, the Tuesday edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Please, I do mention this, but I would like you to actually do it. Do check out our sponsors. We don't have many sponsors, but they're terrific companies. They're ethical companies. Well, Kim is not a company, of course, but dataclinic.co.uk and Chris Seeley, these are terrific people. It's an ethical business. It supports the independent media. If you've got a device that stores digital memory of any description and it's causing you problems, go to dataclinic.co.uk. And Kim Hutchison is a remarkable woman. Check out livingasyoursoul.com. We are, of course, broadcasting live on Alternate Current Radio and fabradiointernational.com. These are great platforms. When this programme is over, you've heard the programme. You don't need to hear a repeat of this programme. Do go to Fab Radio or ACR and find and listen to one of their outstanding programmes. I mean, they really are outstanding programmes. And I can't say highly enough, I can't speak highly enough of them. And I'm delighted to be associated with those two platforms, really. And I have no plans, despite the fact that we do get asked to join other platforms, I have no plans whatsoever to put this programme on any other platforms. This is where you can hear it, and that's the way it's going to be. Right, Tullio Simoncini, I bet you're only dying to hear him. He's next after this, from Genesis, on your Richie Allen Show. Don't miss our next interviewee, our next guest. He's absolutely brilliant. This is The Land of Confusion. We'll be right back. Right, not going to waste any time. I'm just going to get rid of that. That was Genesis and Land of Confusion on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 7 minutes past the hour for Tuesday's programme. And I know you're excited about meeting our next guest. And I know you've got plenty of questions and points to put to him. He's a great guy. I've known him now for a few years. David Icke introduced us. He is a former oncologist who was sadly struck off some years ago for treating a patient with bicarbonate of soda and not radiotherapy. We've gotten into that in the programme in the past. I mean, we're not going to get too much into that today. You will know by now, of course, that under the 1939 Cancer Act, it is illegal to advertise any treatments for cancer. How incredible is that? My next guest continues to treat terminally ill men and women today. And he has been successful in many cases where doctors have given up and have said that the patient's time is up. I'm delighted to be welcoming back to the programme. It's been over a year since we had him on, our friend Tullio Simoncini. Tullio, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me once more. I am fine. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad, Tullio. I'm not doing too bad at all. It's muggy and it's humid here in the studio, but I'm thrilled that you're back on the show. It's such a serious subject, this, and we maybe don't talk about it maybe as often as we should do. Can you tell, do you know, I've never asked you this before. Define cancer, Tullio. What is cancer? And is cancer always the same, or does it come in different forms? What is it?
Cancer is basically a fungal infection. Of course, when the fungus invades the inner part of the organism, there is a reaction of the organism, of the immune system. But the sum of the fungal colonies and the reaction of the immune system makes what we call tumor. Tumor is that is just a description. This is, tumor means like a mass. But what is the cause of this mass? In my opinion, since many years, I told all over the world that the cause, the real cause, the etiological cause of cancer is the fungus, the most powerful parasite in the world.
Now, for the listeners who haven't met you before on this program, tell us about the time in your career when you realized this. How did you come by the information, Tullio, and what did you do with the information then?
When I was young, I was at the university. I was used to follow other alternative care because I was not satisfied about conventional medicine, not only on cancer, but on many other illnesses. And I understood that the psoriasis, that is considered an unknown and incurable illness, was caused by a fungus. I can fix people from psoriasis with the iodine tincture. In a moment of desperation, I thought, I asked God, please help me. What is this bad illness, the cancer? And in a moment I thought, oh, wait a minute, maybe another unknown incurable illness, the cancer, is due to a fungus. So I made the right syllogism. Since then, I started to cure people with the sodium bicarbonate. Sodium bicarbonate because it is an antifungal drug. And I couldn't do any treatment with iodine tincture into the body. But I thought that when the babies had a thrush on the tongue, the thrush of the baby of the tongue, I worked in the pediatric oncologic wards. We were used to clean up the tongue of the babies with sodium bicarbonate. From that consideration, point of view, I started to inject intravenously sodium bicarbonate to cancer patients. One of them, that was a guy, a boy, 11 years old, that was in coma since 15 days. In one day, I gave him sodium bicarbonate solutions intravenously, and he woke up after 6 or 7 hours.
Wow!
From that point, I figured out that I was in the right way.
Now, when you gave the young boy the intravenous bicarbonate, did you tell anybody you were going to do that, or did you keep it? Were you a bit nervous about that, and did you do it by yourself? How did that work, Tullio?
No, it is curious, because I was at the university. I was young. You know, at 11:30 noon, all the professors go away. I was a young doctor, and at that moment I was the chief of the department, because nobody was there.
Right.
And I was doing the anamnesis to the with the mother of the boy, and she told me, "Doctor, I would give all my treasures to speak once more with my boy, because I couldn't speak with him since 15 days. He was in coma in Sicily. He went to Naples, then to Rome." And she told me, "I would give anything if I could speak with him, even though I know that he will die." At that moment, I called the nurse, the chief of the nurse. She had to obey, because I was the chief doctor there. Nobody was there. And I told her to give bicarbonate solutions to this guy. At that time, the triple dosage, 15%. After 7 hours, when I get back to the hospital, the boy was awakened. He was talking with his mother, and everybody was crying in the ward.
This is amazing. What happened after that, then, Tullio?
I mean, I told my professor, "Listen, there is an evidence. I had also other evidence. My aunt that had a big tumor in the stomach that healed completely in one month and a half. I told him, "Listen, professor, can we continue to investigate?" He told me, looking on the ground, "No, I cannot do it." From that point, I went away from the university, and I started to run other patterns, other alternative treatments.
So at that time then, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about the trouble that you had, because we did all this before. But just
one thing, I never was in prison, as they say on internet. Never. This is just a kind of a denigration.
Tullio, I wasn't even going to bring that up. That's utter nonsense. That we both know that. So I wasn't even going to mention that. But you went away then, and you continued to work, and you were treating people sometimes with bicarbonate, but you kept it to yourself. You didn't tell anybody. But there was a time when they found out, obviously, and you got into trouble. That must have been a very difficult time. That. Somebody asked me to. We're getting a lot of really interesting questions on Twitter, and I've got some really good comments for you. But somebody said earlier on, why did they force you to leave the medical profession when giving the bicarbonate of sodium wasn't doing any harm? Why did they take your license away when it wasn't doing any harm?
Because this is a medieval status. They just wanted to block me, to stop me, to go on in my researches. It was illegal what they did, because giving sodium bicarbonate it is well known and given all over the world from 40 illnesses. It was just an abuse to ban me, but I was alone. The system is so strong, you know. All the big discoveries were destroyed, denigrated at first. By the time the truth came out, this is the story of the human being. So what could I do? Nothing, just to accept it. But since then, I started to spread all over the world my theory. I had many, many people completely healed, so people know me all over the world. But because I am on the truth, I have many people completely healed. My theory, it makes sense. It's not like the theory of the madness of the cells that is made by insane minds. You understand? So
yeah,
this is the system, my friend.
It can't have been easy, though. I mean, I remember talking to you about this a couple of years ago on the television in London, and it just can't have been easy because you qualify as a doctor. Your family are very proud to you. You know, it's not every... it's not every family that has a son or a daughter that becomes a doctor. It's a very proud thing. And it must have been difficult for you, and it must have been difficult for them as well. It can't have been an easy time.
Yes, yes, because but the problem is that I had to fight against the stupidity continuously. In the medical border, my friend of mine that worked there told me, you are considered a genius, but they had to ban you because you delegitimate all the system. And it was a hard time, especially at the beginning. I was completely in the desert. But step by step, I conquered many, many positions. They know me all over the world. The only thing that I have to look after is the traps that the system wants to do to me. For instance, many times they accuse me of the death of a people that I even didn't know, or that I speak only with. I spoke only with. The system is not fair. There are bad people. There are jealous people. There are greedy people. This is the real battle, not against the cancer that I know very well what is.
Well, I tell you what, Tullio, it's disgraceful the way, since you had to surrender your license, it's disgraceful that once or twice over the years they have linked you to causing harm to somebody, and they couldn't prove it, and it obviously didn't stand up, because they were treating somebody with radiotherapy or chemotherapy. And even if you did know somebody, and even if you were giving them bicarbonate of soda, you couldn't possibly have hurt them or killed them anyway. But thankfully for you, the rumors and the stupid stories that they said about you, you know, they were bad for, obviously, for you to deal with, but they didn't cause you any serious harm, which is very important. Now, we're getting a lot of emails, so we want to get a little bit technical now if we can. We've had a tweet from Jane. Jane, good evening. Cancer is caused by an acid environment, she says. For example, chemicals, radiation, and bicarbonate of soda is alkaline in nature, and it kills cancerous cells and diet, she says. I don't know what she means by that, but yeah. I get the gist of that. Now, tell me this, Tullio.
There is a big misunderstanding here. There is no problem of alkalinization. This is just a story that... alternative doctors say, I don't know why. And also, cancer cells don't exist. The cancer cells, the samples that are made with the biopsy or other histological examination, visualize only the defense reaction of the cells. That become exhausted against such a powerful infection. So the story, the madness of the cancer cell is mad in itself. No cells, no cancer cell exist. This is just the defense reaction of the organism. So we don't have to deal with the anomaly of the cancer cell. We have to focus our attention to the fungal colonies. They are so powerful that the cells become exhausted, and those cells are visualized by the histological examination. It is the contrary.
So can I get you to just clarify that then?
Yeah.
You are saying that it's not about high alkalinity in the body. It's not about that.
No.
Okay.
No, because there are other cell substances, such as the cesium chloride, that is more alkaline than the sodium bicarbonate, but it doesn't work. It's another problem of alkalinity. If somebody has a pneumonia and we have to give him the penicillin, we don't care if the penicillin is alkaline or is acidic. Alkaline or acidic, we don't care. This is just an anti-pneumonia substance. So it is completely not important if the sodium bicarbonate is alkaline or not alkaline. The problem is that sodium bicarbonate is an antifungal drug.
Now, I can't believe I didn't ask you this. This is so unlike me. The young boy that you gave the intravenous bicarbonate to at the university hospital, was he okay in the end? Did he survive?
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know?
Because my treatment was not accepted. Yeah. I knew that he stayed for 6 days, 7 days at the hospital, at the university, then he went back home. But I didn't follow him anymore because he was in touch with the university.
Right, okay. Tristan tweets this. Tristan, good evening. I don't know if radiation saved my mother's life or if it will kill her down the road. She survived breast cancer, said Tristan. So his mother had breast cancer, had some radiation. She's doing okay now, but he's worried that it might affect her later on, the radiation. I hope not. Do you have anything to say to that, Tullio?
Listen, there are 2-3 tumors that are not tumors. Many times they are operated even if they are benign and they are named malignant. I tell you something. In Italy, all over the country, the oncologists say that breast cancer can be fixed, can be cured. And they say we can cure 90% of breast cancers. I tell you something. They cure 90% of false breast cancer because they operate not malignant tumor.
Right.
Listen to me. Tell me, they say, breast cancer increased in the last 20 years, but we could fix it because we have the suitable treatments. But tell me, 40 years ago, 13 women died in Italy from breast cancer. Last year, 13,000 women died as well from breast cancer. What is changing? Nothing.
Tullio, hang on a second. I've got to be the devil's advocate sometimes now here. And I've got to jump in there. Are you telling me that you can prove that 40 years ago, only 13 women died and that the death was attributed to breast cancer? Is that right?
13,000.
13, you said, back in the 1960s, no?
Yes, 13,000, the same amount as the last year, 13,000. So nothing was changed in 50 years or 40 years.
The
false diagnosis. That's why I think that your mother had a benign tumor.
It might not have been a tumor. It might not have been malignant at all.
Yes.
Spirits.
If it is malignant, she would have been dead.
We're getting so many tweets here, by the way. Folks, if you're just joining the programme, 26 past the hour. The former oncologist, Tullio Simoncini, is on the line. He's an old pal of mine. I don't mind saying that. David introduced me to him some years ago. David loves him and speaks very highly of him. I've gotten to know Tullio. First time we spoke on the TV, we had a bit of a barney, all right. But that was fair enough. He has been promoting the use of bicarbonate of soda for many years to treat cancer, which he says always has been. Malignant tumours always have been fungal in nature. This, of course, has cost him his career. Not that he's too bothered by that now. And we've got another 25 minutes, I suppose, max. I'm going to get through some of these questions. Spirit Samba tweets, Tullio, yes. Can I take a small amount of bicarbonate of soda every day as a preventative measure?
No, I don't give you this advice. Well, first of all, I want to tell you that I am not a former oncologist. I am oncologist today.
Good
but
for you.
I was just banned, but my knowledge is not cancelled.
Fantastic. I stand corrected, my friend.
Yes.
The current oncologist, Tullio Simicini, is on the line.
I would never do sodium bicarbonate for prevention. You know why? Because if somebody takes, one, two, three glass of water with sodium bicarbonate a day, maybe if he has to take a cancer, that will be longer than if he doesn't take sodium bicarbonate. But once the fungus is landed in a tissue, then it will be more difficult to uproot it. Let's say, I just give you an example. The cancer of the breast, it enters through the nipple. So after feeding a baby, usually 6 months after feeding a baby, a woman can have a cancer. There are many new mothers that have a cancer after feeding the baby. If they take sodium bicarbonate, maybe they can prolong the illness until 9 months, 1 year. But if they took sodium bicarbonate, it would be more difficult to treat the fungus because it got adapted. So better don't do it. It is better to observe a correct lifestyle, correct diet, correct work, job. So we have to be... we have to balance all the energy during the day, and then after also we have to stay away from the medicaments that can harm the tissue. They are the first concomitant cause of cancer. So it is the lifestyle that is important, not the prevention with the sodium bicarbonate.
Brilliant. D tweets, cancer treatment is nothing but a money racket with limited success. I was told this by a cancer doctor in Dublin, says Dee. I'm going to read a few of these to you quickly, because there's so many coming in. Christopher O'Neill, how you doing, Chris? They do not want you to cure cancer, especially with such a cheap drug as bicarbonate of soda. Too much money for pharma companies to lose. We'll come back to that in a minute, because I believe it's a couple of billion dollars a year. In terms of business to big pharmaceutical companies. Incredible stuff, this. Loads of tweets coming in. Hi to Sean, hi to Sue. Let me scroll up there. Dominic tweets this, would you kindly ask Tullio, when somebody does have candida, when they do have a genuine tumour, a fungal tumour, how much bicarbonate do you need to consume to tackle cancer? I suppose that's dependent on how big the tumour is, Tullio, no?
Yes, the best way to get rid of cancer is to apply directly onto the tumor or into the tumor the sodium bicarbonate. So oral administration is effective only for the stomach, superficial stomach cancer, or for the liver cancer. But it is important to reach the tumor directly with the sodium bicarbonate. For instance, the most effective therapy is against the bladder, against the neck of the uterus, because you apply directly with the irrigation through the catheters the sodium bicarbonate onto the cancer. In other cancers are very, very, they can respond very well, such as brain, liver, prostate. But in other cases, there's need to do operations. For instance, the soft tissues, segment of the colon, it is better to remove them, only the tumor, and flush sodium bicarbonate always. But usually the dosage that a patient can have is 500 milliliters at 5%. 500 milliliters sodium bicarbonate at 5%. If there is no problem at the first course of six days, a solution of 8.4% can be given. And the sodium bicarbonate is usually safe. It is a physiological substance that we give in a more amount. But for the other cancer, I don't know.
I was just going to jump in there and say one or two of our listeners, including Mark Richards, Mark has tweeted that he doesn't believe there's any way of curing lung cancer. That's hard. What would you do with a lung cancer patient?
Oh, that's difficult, because with the oxygen, sodium bicarbonate can survive more, can defend themselves more. But we have to make a difference. For the pleural cancer, my method is really, really effective. Mesothelioma or metastasis of the pleura have a 0% success rate with the conventional treatments. With my treatment, with sodium bicarbonate applied through a catheter that is installed into the pleura, I have more than 90%. Success rate. You know why? Because into the pleural cavity, the sodium bicarbonate reaches for the nodules immediately, and it kills them. For the lung, is different because it depends on what kind of tumor is in the lung. Usually, the metastasis and sarcoma of the lung or lymphoma are easier. The small cell lung cancer is difficult. Also, the adenocarcinoma, it depends on where it is located. Maybe it is easier. No, it is easier. But anyway, I had the people completely healed from all the type of cancers. Oh, especially metastasis and sarcomas.
We're getting a lot of questions here. It's exactly 25 minutes to the top of the hour. Hesher from Alternate Current Radio is listening in and asks a brilliant question. How is somebody to avoid a false diagnosis, Tullio? So if you're with an oncologist at your local big city hospital, how can you avoid getting a false diagnosis?
No, I don't understand. Sorry, say it again. What is the question?
Yeah, if you're being treated by a doctor, by an oncologist, or if you're seeing one, how can you avoid getting a false diagnosis from the doctor?
You have to change sources of diagnosis. You have to when you go to a hospital and they give you a diagnosis, if it is evident, okay. But if it is not evident, you have to go to another laboratory, another hospital. You have to go to another country. You have to write to me. I will tell you that could be reliable or not.
By the way, funny you mention writing to you. The website I have for you at the moment is cancerfungus.com. Is that it?
Yes, www.cancerfungus.com or also curenaturalicancro.org. This is Italian, but it has many other flags.
I'm just tweeting that out there now. So if you had lung cancer, there wouldn't be any point. One of our listeners has tweeted, would there be any point? It's actually Paul Jackson. There's no point in boiling water with bicarbonate in it and breathing in the steam. That wouldn't do any good, Tullio.
No. It depends on the size. It depends on the location. But I repeat you, I would try, because at least it blocks the tumor. I had also, I tell you, many patients with lung cancer completely healed. But this is a big struggle. It depends, of course, on the size, on the time of the cancer, if the patient did chemotherapy, radiotherapy that make worse the cancer. And may sometimes it can be operated only the nodule, only the tumor and the sodium bicarbonate can be flushed during the operation after the operation. It depends, because there are many variants, locally, topically, histologically, and so on.
Couple of quick questions. You know this better than anybody, but when you do an interview like this, you know that there are people in the audience. Now, I have no idea whether it's 5% of the audience or 10%, but they think that guys like you are crackers to you. You know this. They think this guy is absolutely crazy. And we've spoken many times over the years, and I wouldn't bring you on this program unless I was convinced that you were absolutely convinced of your thesis, which you are. And you are educated, you are a very smart man, and I like listening to you. What do you say to people, Tullio, who say, this is crazy? How could something as everyday as bicarbonate of soda be a cure for serious cancers, and yet we have never heard of it? Why is that?
Yes, I would tell, look at this, at the history of the medicine. Every big scientist that discovered something very revolutionary or precious was named a magician or was named the crazy. So I don't care of them. Yeah, I don't care.
You
of
don't
them, understand me. But I would tell them to be more critical against the conventional treatments. They kill people. There are 10 million people, they have no idea what is the tumor. They are not logical. So what do you want to do? Nothing. They are just close-minded. But I don't care. I have many people that call me professors, students, doctors, normal people. I can speak with them. I don't speak with the people that I have no logical ideas, just prevent it. You understand? I don't have time and energy
You don't waste any time with this. I've had a brilliant email from Alan. It's a long email, but basically, and I did ask you this in the past, but it's a very important question, so I'll answer it again. Alan says that he believes that when somebody is diagnosed with cancer in the stomach or in the kidneys or in the liver, he believes that the chemo kills them very quickly. Now, Alan says he's not a doctor, he's never studied medicine or anything like that, but he wonders if somebody is diagnosed with stomach cancer and they are told by their oncologist, you have 4 months or 6 months to live, but we're going to give you an aggressive radiotherapy and we might prolong your life. Now, Alan believes, he says, if they got no radiotherapy at all, they could live maybe a long time with the tumour in their stomach. Is that right?
Yes, the triple time.
You think three times as long?
Three, yes. No, I think. That's
Go
the
on.
Truth. Because the radiotherapy or chemotherapy just shortens the life. They poison and they destroy the tissues. And the poor organism cannot defend itself. So that's sure. Do you remember when somebody had bacterial infection on the 2-3 centuries ago? The professor archaeatric made big therapies, but at the end they killed before the people. Go and look at the story of Richard II, the king of England. He called the best doctors archaeatric, the one make the first treatment. Then he got worse. The second came, it got worse. The third, they killed him. Now they do the same thing with the chemotherapy and radiotherapy. They are completely insane. They don't touch. They don't treat the tumor at all. They just kill the immune system, and the fungus will spread all over the body.
They admit this, Tullio, because they admit that the success rate of chemotherapy is less than 1 in 10.
Less than?
Yeah.
Less than what?
less than 1 in 10. They say that it doesn't work like 90% of the time. It doesn't work. Yes. The establishment admits this, doesn't it? It tells you. 9 out of 10 times it doesn't bloody work. Yes. It just kills good cells, good tissue, and causes all sorts of problems.
Yes. Yeah, no, it kills all the good cells. The fungus, the chemotherapy cannot kill the fungi. They are happy when the chemotherapy is done.
Pele tweets, I don't think it's the real Pele, but you never know. Pele tweets, bicarbonate of soda cured my heartburn. I used to get a prescription for it, read the side effects, and I decided to go natural, says Pele. Massive interest in this today. At Richie Allen Show for the tweets, and richie@richieallen.co.uk. Paul Coburn asks on email, based on Tullio's work, does he recommend that we take bicarbonate as a supplement or a precautionary? No, he said no. He said no to that earlier on. Hi to Bernard O'Donoghue as well. Thanks for your email, Bernard. Simon Stewart, who is the editor of our YouTube channel, Simon said that he read an article recently in the Independent newspaper that said getting a tattoo, Tullio, can cause cancer. A tattoo, you know, a skin tattoo on your arm, like a tattoo or something, you know, a drawing on your arm or on your chest.
No, everything, any procedure that can harm chronically a tissue can favor the invasion of the cancer or the fungi. Yes, especially the chronic causes. For instance, medicaments or tattoos that can remain there for a long time, or toxics, or bad diet and toxics, or psychological problem for many years. Everything, any kind of harmful cause can favor the cancer.
Just a couple of more quick questions, Tullio, before we let you go, because it's getting late there in Italy. We're not far away from ending the program today anyway. Jane tweets again, remember that allopathic medicine was created by the Rockefeller crowd, and Carnegie only offered funding to medicine that followed chemotherapy drugs. That's absolutely right. Tommy tweets, is it true that chemo came from the 1940s from a chemical weapon which eats out bone cells, so that ultimately it's only effective in blood cancers? What do you think, Tullio?
No, I don't think so. Sometimes chemotherapy with the steroids as well can be effective in blood cancer that is not cancer. Because many times there are leukemias or white cell cancer that are caused, the over-reproduction is caused by viruses or other causes. If there is a fungus, the patient, leukemia, Hodgkin, non-Hodgkin, myeloma, he will die. No other way.
No other
but
way.
But if there is something that is caused by the virus, for instance, let's see the lymphoproliferative illnesses. Sometimes they are caused by the viruses. In that case, the oncologist can be right, but not when there is a fungus.
A couple of quick questions before we go. We've got about 3 minutes left on this. We're going to be quick.
Yes.
Sean tweets, does Tullio have any thoughts that it's possible to catch and to cure cancer in your lifetime without even knowing it? Does it happen, Tullio? Do you develop it in your body without realizing it, and does it go away without you realizing it? Is that possible?
Everything is possible, but usually when there is a cancer that takes roots, an early stage, in my opinion, it is impossible. When the fungus takes roots, you have only to kill it.
You did say, by the way, earlier on, just to clarify, that some of these tumours, they can feed on the chemotherapy and that they can grow from it. Is that right?
No, they are not fed by the chemotherapy. But when the fungus is inside the tumour and the immune system makes a wall to block it, the chemotherapy just destroys the walls, the defensive reaction. So the fungus can walk on in the body, spread and escape everywhere. It is a problem that chemotherapy destroys the defensive reaction. This is the worst effect of the chemotherapy.
Very last question, my friend, from Rhonda. She said she has heard that there is aluminium naturally found in sodium bicarbonate. Is that true or just a rumor?
We don't care about the traces of aluminium. Usually, although in Europe, the sodium bicarbonate is aluminium free and it is effective. This is a question of nothing.
People do worry, of course, about aluminium and it being linked to things like, of course, Alzheimer's and dementia.
Mm. No, I don't think this is a real question. This is not important in my opinion. There are only traces, but they don't do anything to the organism.
But not too many. Folks, no. go to cancerfungus.com. It's a terrific website. I've just tweeted it out there again. And read more about what Tullio has been talking about today. There are contact details for him on there as well. Been a pleasure, Tullio. It's been a long time since you came on, and great to get you back on. You sound great, and continued success to you and to your team. And I hope we'll talk again in the future. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. I hope to speak with you once more in the future. Thank you.
Anytime. The lovely Tullio Simoncini on the line to us there from Italy. And I got through the bulk of those questions there before we had to say goodbye to him, I think. I'll read some more tweets when I come back after these.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk. Now.
And welcome. I got this horrible pain in my right ear. I don't know if it's the headphones. I hope it isn't. I hope it's nothing more serious than that. It's a real pain in the arse now. Very Irish thing to say. I have a pain in the ear. It's a pain in the arse. I'm actually fiddling away with it there as I chat with you. One of those things. It could be the cans, as we say in the trade. Huge interest in that. Every time I do something like that, you know what I think? I think when I was presenting and producing in commercial radio, we wouldn't be allowed to interview him. Wouldn't be. Full stop. And if there was even a 1% chance that you could bring him on, you would be allocating him 6 or 7 minutes if you were lucky. And you would be compelled by the people who own your radio station to constantly interrupt him and say that it's own madness. That's what the mainstream media is, you see. Tullio was due to be here a few years ago to give a conference. And a number of you have mentioned the 1939 Cancer Act, which makes it illegal to talk about, well, to talk about cures for cancer or to advertise cures for cancer. You can't do it. It's against the law in this country. And Tullio was due to be here. But the event he was due to attend was cancelled because men in suits turned up and said they were prosecuting the organiser of the event under the 1939 Cancer Act. And Tullio was told he wouldn't be welcome to come here and talk about that. I'm always mindful of that. You know, this programme, interviews like that absolutely highlight what this programme is all about, really. It's finding learned men and women. A system man, a former system man, who held the, you know, the laudable position of doctor and oncologist in his community and decided to pursue a thesis, as you heard there, and was struck off, called crazy, and he carries on anyway. Of course, he's got to be very careful about carrying on. And in the, you know, in the mainstream media, you know, as I said, in the very, very, very small chance you could bring Tullio on, you would have to demonise and ridicule him, and that would be the only way you could get him on. It's incredible, really. You know, that's the media, isn't it? But didn't I spend 45 minutes in the first hour talking to you about the picture that the media has painted about Islamic State and about Al-Qaeda and who they are? Yeah, yeah. It's sad, really, isn't it? I suppose it does depress me. We can't reach the sorts of numbers they can in the mainstream media. You know, we've got a big audience, but you can't get a million people today anyway. Maybe next year. This time next year, Rodney, we'll have a million listeners. D tweets, great Richie, eyes open as always. And it is the cans. Glasses as well, it's a pain in the arse. Yeah, I have glasses as well. I have glasses as well. Feathers are us tweets, fascinating interview, Richie. I've not heard Tullio before. And Faisal tweets, I loved Tullio's attitude to dealing with scientific trolls. So did I. Just ignore them. Just ignore them and move on. Like I said, David introduced me to Tullio some time ago. Aidan tweets, great guest, Richie. Would be great to have him on again for a Q&A, such an important subject. We will get him on, Aidan. Maybe I'll ask him to come on in the autumn. And I'm sure he'll take me up on the offer and he'll come on and chat with us. I have no doubt about that. So then, that kind of wraps up the programme for today. Big thanks to Tullio for coming on. Thanks for listening to my thesis, my synopsis, my, what would you call it? I don't know. My dissertation, can I say that, about ISIS in the first hour. That will be on YouTube in the morning. And I would ask you, with no trace of pretension or no trace of arrogance at all, do share that around. What I told you about ISIS and who they really are and what they're not, which is a massive network, this incredible crime syndicate of terrorists. It isn't. It's utter bollocks. Tweet that around when you see it in your feed tomorrow. Paul Jackson tweets me just before I sign off there. What is it, Paul? It looks interesting. One of my friends has prostate cancer, says Paul. They told him not to eat tomatoes, but it's okay to drink Coke. But sugar feeds cancer cells, said Paul Jackson. I wish I had have, read that and put that to Tullio, by the way, Paul. Tez Howell, my friend in Salford. Tez, thanks for the kind words. By the way, Tez, as a big experiment over the last few months, he's been producing, with my permission, Richie Allen Show mugs to raise some money for the programme. If you go to ebay.co.uk or ebay.com and look for Richie Allen Show mug, you'll find the mug. After the production cost of making the mug, all the proceeds come to me, come to the radio show. Big thanks to Tez for that there. And thanks for all your tweets. Thanks to Truth Lover, M. Falstein on Twitter. Thanks to everybody who tweeted. Look, if you want to support the programme, the way to do it is go to richieallen.co.uk. There are PayPal details and there are bank transfer details there as well. My PayPal email address is richieallen@hotmail.co.uk if you want to make a contribution to the show. Only do it if you can afford it. If you can't, I would appreciate you watching the shows on YouTube, sharing them, helping us out like that. That's just as good to me. If you can afford a donation and you do listen to the show, but you don't donate, look at yourself in the mirror. This program, I spend 16 hours a day on this show, 5 days a week, and 6 hours on Sunday morning. That's the truth, by the way. And it needs funding. So there you go. Thanks to Jaded Ginge, thanks to Chemtrail Sky, to Spirit Samba, and to William Armstrong, and to everybody else who sent lovely tweets about Tullio. I'm glad you enjoyed listening to him. Regardless of what you think about the information, I'm glad that you enjoyed it and you might get something out of it. You don't have to agree with it. You know that as well as I do. That's it then. Leaving you and loving you with some Dido. Back tomorrow with Max Egan for an extended interview on Wednesday's show. Thanks to everybody for listening. Bye now. See you tomorrow.
You asked me where I go tonight. I go back to today last year. We knew how to make each other happy and there was hope with everything. It's hard enough to feel the world as it is and hold on. These quiet times you've bought round here. I'm gonna have to run away. I'm sure that I belong some other place. I've seen another side of all I've seen. It keeps me wondering where my family is. It's hard enough to see the world as it is and hold. These quiet times coming round here. And I miss you. And I want you. But I can't have you. You when you're here. I suppose I have to take you with me. Broken mind, I'd rather. Forget everything you've seen and known and erase every idea. And you walk up in the street and hold my hand and smile. Well, I won't be taken in, 'cause I know how it turns out and it takes me back to these quiet times coming.